We have two very different looks this hour at the consequences of law and order policies popular a generation ago that elected candidates and made the careers of many famous politicians. Today, though, prison and criminal justice reform are the watchwords. We'll see how Republicans are leading the way in the state of Georgia later this hour. But at the FBI and the Justice Department, there's been a formal admission that the scale of prosecutions over the past two decades may have resulted in flawed evidence convicting possibly innocent criminals. At issue is the forensic science of using matching hair samples to place a suspect at a crime scene. An ongoing Department of Justice investigation has found 257 cases where FBI agents presented faulty hair evidence that led to a conviction. 32 of those cases carried death sentences. Independently investigating are the Innocence Project and the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. Chris Fabricant is Director of Strategic Litigation at the Innocence Project and joins me. Welcome to the studios.
Thank you.
So what's the nature of this scandal? Are we talking about bad science, bad practice? What's going on?
Well, this is a particularly virulent strain of the cancer of unvalidated and unreliable forensic evidence being used in criminal trials. And what this audit means is that for the last 40 years, the FBI has been introducing exaggerated and unreliable testimony claiming to be able to associate a particular hair with a particular individual. And there's no database to support the assertions that were being made for over 40 years, and courts has accepted without really questioning. And many, there are at least 74 wrongful convictions that are associated with microscopic hair comparison evidence.
So the FBI has perhaps been more concerned about putting on a good show for the jury and presenting its evidence rather than actually verifying and confirming the veracity of these matching hair fibers.
Right. Well, if you think about hair comparison evidence, or really all trace evidence like this, tire treads,
right,
tool marks,
sure,
ballistics, is that there are really two issues. There's one is that the FBI claimed to be able to associate a particular defendant or suspect with a crime scene hair. And number two, and very importantly, they claim the ability to say how rare or how common that association was. And what they had was no data as to how rare or how common it was. Could it be one in five people had left this hair, or one in 5 million? Or sometimes, often, we would see individualization type testimony where they claim that the defendant himself, to the exclusion of everybody else on the planet, left the hair at the crime scene. So it's really almost a directive verdict of guilt, and it's all invalid, grossly exaggerated testimony.
So there's never really been a case of figuring out what the statistical likelihood is of any similar-looking or exact-looking hair-to-hair comparison in any crime. The FBI sort of come up with this on their own. And again, I'm not impugning their motives here.
No, I mean, what many analysts did and taught hundreds of state hair comparison experts to do the same was use their own experience to suggest that hair was essentially unique, or that the chances of a coincidental match between a suspect and a random person in the universe was so unlikely as to be meaningless. And they had no data to support that. And so what they used was their own experience and suggested that that was somehow probative. And any first-year statistics student would tell you that that's a scientifically invalid statement.
Now, at the Innocence Project, you're familiar with DNA evidence.
Sure.
Now, in this particular case, DNA evidence does have probative value, and you do have the science backing it, even if there can be cases of wrong DNA evidence, right?
Sure. Yes. I mean, wrong DNA evidence is usually a misapplication of the science. Here we have – there is no science to be applied.
And with fingerprints, is that a completely made-up thing, or are there specific statistical profiles that can tell us a fingerprint's likelihood to be exact in a matching case?
Well, people will be shocked to know that the uniqueness of the human fingerprint has never been scientifically established. There are many people – most people believe that they are unique, but – So if you think about, again, going back to the two kind of assumptions of this type of evidence, is that one is that you can make an association between a mark at a crime scene. So if you're talking about a fingerprint, it's a smudge on a wall. And there's evidence, of course, that you can associate somebody with their fingerprints. But the second part, the second assumption, that you could say that this person left this fingerprint to the exclusion of everybody else on the planet, as the science stands right now, we can't say that consistent with science. And even more importantly, probably, is that we don't know how similar two people's fingerprints might be, particularly if it's smudged at a crime scene.
So in many ways, the FBI, in moving from fingerprint evidence to fiber evidence, is basically walking in the steps of history here, not really doing the scientific job of figuring out what the probative value is of any of this evidence.
Right, and that's why the Innocence Project has called upon the White House to advance a strategic research agenda in an effort to validate these claims that are being made in courts today. The National Institute of Science and Technology has a research agenda. They're going to attempt to establish national standards for this type of evidence because currently they don't exist. What somebody's saying in Mississippi will be different than somebody saying in New England, which is different than somebody saying in California. So we at the Innocence Project advocate for upstream remedies to establish national standards through the Organization of Scientific Area Committees and the research that's being done by NIST. Unless and until we do that, the claims that forensic practitioners are making in courts are speculative.
Finally, before we go, with all these crime shows, you know, with all this sort of scientific evidence going on here, juries seem to have aha moments when they think about fingerprints and fiber evidence. Mm-hmm. Are lawyers hip to this? Are defendants able to say, hey, wait a minute?
Well, I mean, the sad history of the use of unvalidated and unreliable forensics in criminal courts suggests that, you know, the scientific illiteracy is a huge problem in criminal justice. So I think that there's a dawning of a realization given the number of wrongful convictions and the 2009 National Academy of Sciences report on the state of forensic sciences, which found really only DNA evidence is a reliable technique.
Chris Fabrikant is Director of Strategic Litigation at the Innocence Project. Thanks so much, Chris.
My pleasure.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.